Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands.
Today we have on the Marketing Technology Podcast, Greg Sterling. Greg is the VP of Market Insights at Uberall. Welcome, Greg.
Thanks very much. I'm glad to be here.
Cool. So, Greg, can you explain a little bit about yourself, how you have come to where you are at the moment, and what you do at Uberall?
I was born in Los Angeles, California. No, I'm kidding. you don't want to hear my life story.
It's going to be a long podcast.
Yeah, you don't want to hear my life story. So I'm the VP of Market Insights at Uberall, which involves a number of different functions that I perform, but a lot of it has to do with telling a story of location marketing to the broader marketplace, using our data to provide information and insights to our customers and the broader marketplace. And I have been in the location marketing space, to the extent that that's a space, for roughly 20 years. In various capacities, focused on small business marketing issues and multi-location brands. The common theme is the way in which consumers use the internet or digital media to make offline purchase decisions, which is where, notwithstanding the coronavirus, the overwhelming majority of spending happens. And in the past, people have not understood well that connection between online and offline because it was hard to track. And with the advent of smartphones, that's become easier. And the way in which location data are being used today is in many and varied ways. And we'll get into that in a little bit. Uberall is a company based in Berlin, Germany, which provides a range of services. It's a SaaS company. Reputation management, business data management, local landing pages. But basically, they all kind of track this pattern that I described, this kind of near-me experience from online discovery to offline sales. And so we've got a range of products that try and mirror that customer journey and help brands and through partners, small business customers, provide that online to offline experience and be found when their customers are looking. Hopefully that wasn't too convoluted and confusing for you.
No, but it's. I think it's intriguing to hear from a specialist within the industry about location data, because I've noticed with marketers, at least over here in Europe, that it's location data is not used a lot yet by the majority of people. So everyone. Or let's say every marketer has heard of it, but I haven't met a lot of marketers that have in-depth knowledge about location data and what it can do for you. So I think this is a great thing that we can discuss this in this this podcast, and we can make the marketer a little bit more knowledgeable on location data. So could you explain how this gathering of location data actually works?
Well, traditionally, people did what was called reverse IP lookups for the desktop. You would you had a server somewhere that was generating an IP address, and that was used crudely to identify somebody's location. And usually, it was within a reasonable distance, and so you could personalize ads and content to some degree based on location. So if I'm in California, in San Francisco, California. The website could show me the nearest stores to that location, but that's often inaccurate and can be quite crude. So you could have something which is many 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 kilometers away from me, or it could be completely wrong. With with smartphones now, you get location pretty accurately. We can talk about accuracy, but with GPS and with cell tower triangulation and Wi-Fi, there are a number of mechanisms to get accurate location. And you can determine whether somebody has visited a particular store, whether they've been in a museum, or where they live, for example. So you can determine, and then there are certain characteristics about people that you can either determine explicitly or infer. So if I'm going back and forth to a particular airport with frequency, one could infer that I am a business traveler, although not this year. I haven't gone anywhere this year, of course. but in the past, I used to travel quite a bit. And so my phone would show where I live because that's where it spent the most time. And then it would show that I was going back and forth to San Francisco International Airport with regularity. So then certain assumptions about my interests and behavior could be made and combined with other data to profile me or to put me into an audience segment and to serve me ads or content. Then beyond that, because it also shows my presence in particular locations, as I just mentioned, you can do attribution. So you can tie a mobile device ID to a household and even link it to other media and other devices. And so, for example, you could determine if I was exposed to an ad campaign, either on my mobile device or desktop or even television, and then whether I went into a particular store. So a grocery store, Aldi, for example. Yep. Did I see the ad and did I show up within a certain kind of time frame, 30 days, a week, whatever it was? And then you could do attribution. You could do online to offline attribution, which was quite useful because that was something that was always elusive to marketers in the past. And there are a bunch of other things you can do, but those are the primary things that people have done.
So, and that's a great, great technology. But I can imagine, just one step back, that marketers will just have a question on how this actually works. Because, you know, you are talking about determining a mobile device ID, et cetera. So is my iPhone broadcasting this from itself? How does it work? Is it in apps or how does it actually work? How do you determine the location data for each device?
Well, so there are two contexts. One would be a mobile browser, which was going to be less accurate than a mobile app. So within the app environment, you have much more accurate location. So for example, on the iPhone and on Android devices, you get asked whether or not to share, you want to share your location with a particular app. So if I have a weather app or if I have a mapping app like Google Maps or Apple Maps, of course I'm going to share my location because I can't get the weather and I can't get directions unless I do. Uh-huh. Those data are very, very accurate because they rely on these multiple mechanisms that I described, GPS, cell tower triangulation and Wi-Fi in some cases. Bluetooth also is used in certain cases to determine location. So they get your location through an app, much more accurate than the browser. And then in many instances, that location data is passed on to a third party. So there's a whole ecosystem of buyers of that location data. And some app publishers make money by selling location data to third parties who then will use it for ad targeting or attribution purposes. And there are many companies, some of which are in Europe, that aggregate that data from app publishers and then provide it to marketers or resell it to others who want to use it in the programmatic ad ecosystem.
Okay, so cool. And one of the things you mentioned while we had a little conversation before this podcast is that you think that this mobile, let's say, positioning or geo-targeting, geolocation could replace, like, let's say, a third-party cookie, because we got new technology coming up, abandonment of third-party cookies, etc. So how do you see that movement happening?
Well, at least in theory, and we have to get into the privacy discussion in a couple of minutes. At least in theory, some people were calling location history or location data a cookie for the real world, because what your location history will show is your movements through the real world. I visited a car dealer. I visited a store. I visited the airport. I went to a school, and like third-party cookies, you get kind of a profile or behavioral profile essentially, but it's in many ways more accurate than browser-based cookies because you're actually taking real world visitation data as the source of the profile. As your device moves through the world, that's recorded, and you can be placed, as I mentioned earlier, you can be placed in certain kinds of audience segments. So you could be a sports enthusiast. I go to a lot of football games, and I'm in the stadium. So these technologies can see that I'm in a particular stadium, and I'm going with regularity. And so if I'm a fan of a particular team, I can be identified as such and targeted, et cetera. Things can be personalized to me on the basis of my real world behavior. So there are profiles that can be built up. The different technology companies will always talk about it being anonymous because brands want to target audience segments at scale. They don't want to necessarily reach you, Elias, or me, Greg, as an individual. They want to see people like me or like you at scale. So this is all collected in a theoretically anonymous way and can be used to put us into audience buckets, for example. I mean, there are a lot of other things that you can do with location that are not about advertising, targeting, or attribution. A lot of sort of business intelligence kinds of things, operational insights. I mean, you can, for example, do certain kinds of urban planning, transportation planning, with this kind of data. You know, you see movements of people and at a mass scale, it can be a helpful input into traffic patterns, certain kinds of urban behavior patterns that could assist people in making different kinds of planning decisions.
Absolutely. So I can imagine that it could be helpful for the, let's say, Lyft and all these other little scooter vendors, et cetera. It could be very interesting. Yeah. One of the other things that I think is very interesting about this technology, and we've used it before at Marketing Guys as well, is that you could, as you said, you could establish an audience, which you could also use for retargeting.
Yes.
Pretty cool. You know, you'll find someone that is in this audience of a specific football club, or it could be a car dealer audience whatsoever, and you could retarget those. And you could also do that cross device, right? So
precisely.
So which is really cool.
So this is what you're describing is the cookie is at least in theory a cookie replacement, because all the things that you would do with cookies for retargeting purposes or for profiling can be done with location and arguably in a more accurate way.
Nice, yeah. And I'm always surprised that not too many marketers are using this, because they don't know it, but one of the things that they're always scared about is, as and you referred to it earlier, is privacy. So how does it work with privacy, this technology?
So in Europe, all of this location tracking is under GDPR, an opt-in proposition. So marketers, first parties have to get permission, which is similar to what happens today in Android and iOS to share location. In North America, in the United States in particular, it's been an opt-out proposition historically. So, which is the way that Americans tend to do things: beg for forgiveness rather than ask for permission.
You're opting out of everything here.
Yeah. Well, so it's been historically an opt-out proposition, and as I mentioned, I've talked to all of these companies, or virtually all of these companies that are in the space and that are collecting this data, and they all will say, we're privacy compliant. We do all this on an anonymous basis. There's no PII here. Of course, that's we'd have to go case by case, but that's only a partial truth, right? Because you can infer somebody's identity pretty quickly. If I live at a particular address and I'm going to certain businesses or certain kinds of locations, you can zero in on me and identify me pretty quickly. So privacy is definitely an issue, and it's become more of an issue. I think that many marketers probably in Europe are intimidated or uncertain about how to capture this data in a way that's compliant with GDPR. I mean, I think, there was there's a French company, and I'm forgetting the name, unfortunately, right now, that said in a test, they were flagged for a GDPR violation, although they tell the story a little bit differently. And they worked with Sunil, the privacy regulator in France to come up with a methodology to make collecting location data compliant under GDPR. And it was basically about transparency and disclosure. We are collecting this data. We will be transmitting it to these third-party partners. Do you consent to this or do you not consent to this? And so just being very straightforward about it. And they said, if I remember this correctly, that they got some very, very high opt-in rates based on this these disclosures. So it was above 50%, mm-hmm. Which was surprising to me. So so in Europe, it's an opt-in scenario. In the US, it's been opt-out. But more recently, with Apple's move under iOS 14 to deprecate essentially IDFA and requiring marketers, requiring app publishers to ask for permission to track them, which includes location. You know, it's becoming an opt-in scenario in the United States, notwithstanding whatever the legal rules are. I mean, at the platform level, they're forcing app developers to move to an opt-in scenario. And Apple has been putting more and more restrictions around location or being more transparent, forcing app developers to be more transparent about location. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't get people to opt in. It just means you have to be much more persuasive and much more transparent with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say you have... you're sure as a marketer that you want to do something like this. Apart from privacy, there's probably some other stuff that you want to know about this technology. And you know, marketers are always concerned about conversion rates, what are click-through rates, etc. So how could you say anything about how campaigns, let's say based on geolocation, compare to other online campaigns?
Well, so there's I would distinguish a kind of a geotargeting ad campaign. So where you're targeting somebody in a particular area, right? I mean, that's what you mean by geolocation in this context.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you're doing, I'll use this, an example. So one of the early use cases for location data was conquesting. So who are the carriers, the mobile carriers in the Netherlands?
We have KPN, Vodafone, T-Mobile.
Okay, great. So I'm a T-Mobile customer in the US. So let's say I'm T-Mobile and I want to target Vodafone customers with this particular offer. Mm-hmm. So I can identify people that have come into Vodafone stores in the last 30 days. They may be active shoppers or they may be existing customers. And then I can target them with a conquesting offer from T-Mobile, you know, that addresses them in particular in the ad creative. Hey, Vodafone customer, here's a 50% off deal, you know, for the first 3 months, whatever it is. That was an early common use case. And that involves geotargeting in the sense that you're targeting people in a very specific area. I mean, you could target them while they were in the stores in theory or just after they had come out of the stores. Those kinds of campaigns historically where there's a location element, where you're personalizing the message to somebody based on location or where you're narrowly constraining the location have performed well versus generic campaigns. I mean, Google, for example, this is sort of an adjacent example, but Google has said that location extensions tend to increase click-through rates and performance of ads by, I think, 15% is what they were saying. Oh. But that's a crude metric. I mean, I think it depends on the ad creative, and I think it depends on a number of things. But geolocation has historically been an effective strategy from an ad campaign standpoint. The challenge has been scale. And one of the things that's interesting about location history and mobile location data is that you don't have to use real-time location. I mean, this is sort of paradoxical. So Elias, you go into Vodafone with thousands of other people, and I identify you. Oh, here are Vodafone customers. But then I can target you at any point after that. It doesn't have to be when you're near the store. You could be at home, you could be on holiday, you could be anywhere. But because I've identified you as a potential Vodafone customer, I can target you now at any time, and it's not specific to your location. It's specific to your identity. So it's location turning into identity in that particular case. So there's sort of two slightly different things. using location as a way to identify audiences and intent, right? So if I'm in the Vodafone store, if I'm in a car dealer, then the inference is that I'm actively shopping versus real-time location where I'm targeting somebody based on where they are at a football stadium right now.
Absolutely. So that's amazing to, I think, for some marketers to find out how this actually could be added to their marketing mix, because I don't have the figures here at hand, but you know, in my experience, not a lot of marketers are using geolocation as one of the channels or one of the inputs for their campaigns yet. Do you have some advices on what kind of creatives work? Because you said like it's a 15% increase, it's like the rough average or something that people mentioned. But do you have like best practices of campaigns that work, or you know, other ones that maybe not work, or maybe specific things work in specific situations, or am I asking you a too difficult question here?
No. I mean, I don't have any case studies that I can bring out. I'm not somebody who's running ad campaigns. I'm not in an agency running ad campaigns. I mean, I think to some degree, the creative question is a question of A/B testing. But yeah. I do think one of the things, you know, one of the things that we're always talking about now is personalization. Nobody wants to receive any message that or any ad that isn't personalized. And personalization is very difficult to accomplish. I mean, it's a buzzword that's thrown around quite a bit. But one of the ways in which you can personalize is using location.
Yep.
So you can include a city name or a neighborhood name or a personalize in some way around in the football example, identifying the team. The risks involved in that if you get it wrong. If I'm accompanying you to a football match and I hate the team that is the home team or the resident team. And you target a message to me. you're not gonna succeed with me. But basically, location information can be used to personalize the ad creative. But I don't have a good case study to show you generic versus
Well, I can give you one example that we've done. I think 1.5 years ago for the Austrian tourist office in the Netherlands.
Yes, that's a good use case. Yeah,
that was a great use case, which we've done with marketing guys. But you know, I can share you some examples of it. We had an engagement of 10% on specific ads. So, and the whole success factor for that those ads was using first of all, let's say a little gamification, and I'll come to it what it was, and the other one was. Personalization based on the specific area. So what we did there was like the use case the Austrian tourist office had there was that they had a lot of people going for, let's say Dutch people go for skiing in winter holidays, but they wouldn't return for summer holidays to Austria. In that case, they would be in France. So what we did is we kind of tagged audiences while they were in the ski lifts. And let's say the Dutch people going up in a specific area, and we would audience them in specific audience area. So it could be like Kitzbühel or Steiermark or whatever, you know, all these little areas. And we would retarget those in spring. What we did there was like when you had been to Kitzbühel, for example, you would see an ad which the ad would show up on a news page in the app, and you would have to shake the snow off. So use the capabilities of the device. So you would have to shake the snow off, and then you would have a 360 view of that specific area on your cell phone. And we had like a 10% engagement on that.
Yeah, that's a great campaign. That's a great example of sort of the marriage of location and ad creative.
Yeah.
So that's a terrific example. You know, tourism, they come in winter, but they don't come in summer. Or here are the people that have been to a particular country. Let's retarget them with some related offer. Yeah, those are great examples.
Another one that I could share here is one we did on the customer data conference was we have, let's say, an institute here in the Netherlands. It's called the Camping Industry, Camping and Caravanning Industry. So what they wanted to do is they wanted to have an audience with people that are camping. So we had 7 countries and we had the campsites identified, so fenced. All Dutch people put them in an audience. And once they came back to the Netherlands, we based on their current location,
directed them to a dealership for maintenance. So all that kind of stuff is that. That's what we.
Yeah. So those are great examples. I mean, you could do this interview. You could interview yourself here on
book. Well, I'm not. No, I'm just sharing.
No. I'm saying these are terrific examples. Very practical examples. They illustrate the kind of thing that you can do with location. You identify the people who belong in a particular category or who are exhibiting a certain behavior or inclination, and then you can retarget them with related information or you know, subsequent, you know, the next thing in the sequence, which in your case in the here was maintenance. So it's terrific. So there's two sides, right, to digital marketing. One is the helpful side, and then one is the sort of sinister manipulative side, right?
Yep.
So the helpful side is what you describe, which is people who've been to Austria who like Austria maybe haven't considered it as a summer holiday destination. This information might be very helpful to them. The maintenance example also helpful. There might be offers that are associated with those ads. So people are very receptive to those kinds of things. The thing that they don't like is they don't like the idea of being tracked without their consent or knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the darker side that has been pursued in some cases. And people become very uncomfortable with that. You know, I mean, you have this challenge where people will consistently tell surveys, I want personalized information. I want, you know, relevant offers. I want relevant ads.
Yep.
And then they'll say, on the other hand, I don't want to be tracked, you know. And the reconciliation of that, and also the way to get privacy compliant, is to disclose all of that and to get them to opt in.
Yep.
Which marketers, at least in North America and the U.S., have not had to do really until now. And they're all quite, wringing their hands over it, because I think it's going to be quite challenging with some of the language that Apple has put in that IDFA notice. You know, will you allow do you want to be tracked across websites and, by third parties? And that language is quite ominous, I think, for marketers.
Yeah, and the other thing, of course, is that the privacy shield was suspended last July, which adds another,
another layer of complexity in all of this.
Yep. So I don't even want to go into that, but, you know, it's like the privacy shield is another thing that comes up, and hopefully it will be resolved within the next couple of months.
I don't think we're going to see it resolved before the outcome of the U.S. election, which hopefully will be. See a changing of the administration. personal bias, but yeah. I think until there's really a new regime in place, a new administration in place that is more willing to work with European governments on this issue of surveillance, I think it's highly.
It is a highly complicated matter, because it's the questions we get here in Europe is like can we even do business with American companies? Whereas we hear about the example in the news on TikTok and the US, you know, asking the same things from China, you know, and it all has to do with your administration. So yeah, the elections will be November 3rd, right? So
not my administration, but yes, you're right.
Yeah, the U.S. administration. So
yes, no, I am not a supporter. I am not a supporter.
I see all kinds of things showing up online, Republicans for Biden, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
it's quite an urgent situation. But that's a whole different podcast.
Oh, we can do hours on that one, you know.
And yes, we certainly can.
I have my opinions there as well, but I'm not sharing those in the MarTech podcast. So,
yeah.
Greg, is there anything else you would like to share with the audience before we wrap up?
Well, I mean, I think what I would say from my experience in the last 20 years is that location marketing has historically been treated as something relevant to small businesses, as a kind of a niche kind of preoccupation. And it's these questions about location, about personalization, about data, about online to offline behavior are really central to all marketers at this point. You know, anybody that sells anything in a physical location, or anybody that uses audience data for ad targeting purposes, these questions are very, very central. All brands, all enterprises really need to think about location and have a location strategy. I think that is an important thing that only now in the last couple of years are enterprises starting to think about. And as you point out with your excellent case studies, this kind of information, this kind of data has really not been utilized very well by the majority of marketers. And there's an enormous amount of value there that can be tapped into if you do it in an ethical way. But there's just a lot of possibilities there.
Should people or listeners want to learn more about those possibilities, where can they reach you? Where can they best reach you?
Well, I'm happy to give my work email address. I'm on Twitter at G Sterling, G-S-T-E-R-L-I-N-G, my first initial and last name. And then you could email me at greg.sterling, greg.sterling@ubral.com. I'm happy to receive email there.
And I'll put that in the show notes for the listeners so they don't have to write while trying.
Yes, write quickly right now as they're listening.
Yeah. No, we'll put those in the show notes as well as probably your LinkedIn profile. And, thank you very much, Greg, for being on the Marketing Technology podcast. It was a pleasure having you.
Yes, thank you. My pleasure. And lots of interesting topics that we could go on about if we had more time.
We will have in future.
Okay, excellent.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Also, if you want to be a guest or know someone that should be a guest to our show, shoot me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you for listening.